introduce the moderator for this session, Dr. Edith Nodelman. Dr. Nodelman serves as the chief of the Affective and Regulatory Disorders Program within my division, and she's graciously agreed to moderate our experts in submission and review. And there's a lot going on, so this is a really important session. So you can keep up, and no grant is will ever get funded if it doesn't get in and get into the electronic system and get into review. So that's kind of the fundamentals. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Edith. Thank you.
Thank you. We're fortunate to have our colleagues from the Center for Scientific Review, as well as from internally NIMH. Dr. Noronha does the liaison with CSR, but also is involved in the review of services and treatment research that's reviewed internally. And so what you're going to get, the new expert's guide to NIH grant submissions and review. And our first speaker is Dr. Anita Miller-Sustek, who is the director of the Division of Clinical and Population-Based Studies at the Center for Scientific Review. Very pleased that she has come to join us.
Okay, thank you. I know there's been some questions, at least, why are we here? This is people from the Center for Scientific Review, but as I'll go through, you'll see that actually the Center for Scientific Review, which is the group that reviews the majority of the applications for all of the NIH, reviews a large proportion of the applications that come to the National Institute of Mental Health. They're taking care of me. That's good.
What do I do?
Okay.
Or you can use this.
If we want.
Sorry. There you go. That's easy.
Okay. So I'm going to give you the overview of what happens when an application comes into the NIH. And the Center for Scientific Review doesn't only do review, we also do the receipt and referral of all the applications. And this means all the applications that come to the NIH. So even if it's an application that will definitely be reviewed at one of the institute review shops, and I think your panel before had people from CSR as well as people from mental health, even if it'll definitely go to another venue for review, it still comes through receipt and referral. So if you start off with the person, the stylized individual, the computer, they are the investigators who are initiating a research idea, and that, of course, is the beginning. And the application gets submitted, but it does not get submitted by those individuals. Those individuals are the investigators. The applicant is, in fact, the organization, with rare exception. One exception would actually be fellowship applications. But with rare exception, what we call the applicant, I mean, in the vernacular, we call the applicant the investigator, but the actual applicant is the school or other research center. And this is important because the investigator cannot withdraw an application. If you've ever tried to withdraw an application for whatever reason, say you were lucky enough to get funding from some other agency for the same project, you need to have a co-signature from the signing official of your institution, and that's the applicant organization. So the application is submitted to the National Institute of Health, and it goes directly to the Center for Scientific Review. So the address that you send this to is our mailroom. Now, that's not exactly right, as Jean will inform you later, because we're starting to have electronic submission. And in that case, you're not sending it to our mailroom. And the slide that I'll show you next, which is all the paper, will gradually decline into electrons. But she will go into detail because that's one of the trends and changes that you'll need to be aware of. So for now, let's assume that we're talking about paper. And even if we're not, the applications that go through grants.gov make their first stop in our receipt and referral shop. So essentially that part of the process is the same. They get to see what comes in and decide where it goes. And in terms of where applications go, they go to two places. All applications go to two places. And one is a potential funding institute or center. So they need to be assigned. You know, you have that application number, and it has NH or HD or some abbreviation of one of the NIH institutes. That is one of your assignments. Who will fund this application should it get a fundable score? The other place that it has to go to is a venue for review, which might be at the Center for Scientific Review, or it might be at the funding institute itself. And you don't get to pick that, because that's not based upon preference. It's based upon the type of application and the agreement between that particular institute and the Center for Scientific Review. So in the case of NIMH, we review the majority of their applications, but they do have standing study sections for intervention and treatments, and another for services. So the investigator-initiated award, somebody gets a good idea, puts in an application. It's not in response to a particular call for applications initiative, RFA, or anything like that. Those applications come to CSR, but the ones that are still investigator-initiated, same conditions, if they are in treatment or services, come to NIMH for review. That may not be the case for other institutes. We would see those for other institutes. But it's very complex, which is probably the reason that the thing you'll hear most here is talk to program, get advice before you submit, find out what's going on. Now, if you do have an application that's coming to the Center for Scientific Review for the review, you're allowed to suggest the actual study section you would like it to go to. So you can't say, I want this to go to mental health for review, but you can say, I would like this to go to child psychopathology and developmental disabilities, as an example. And I'll show you later that you can get a lot of information on what those study sections cover and who's on those study sections off the CSR website. So basically, you've now got an application number because you've been assigned to a particular institute, and you will be reviewed in a particular committee, and you were just hearing about SEPs. It may be a standing committee. It may be special emphasis panel. It may be, a special emphasis panel that recurs, depending on the funding mechanism. It may be one that's constituted just for the specific circumstance, because there's a member of the study section, the most appropriate study section named. So there's a lot of different reasons why it may go to a particular committee. And basically, it will then go to the review meeting, which Mike Micklin will describe for you. And you'll eventually get a review outcome, which will either be a score or it may be unscored. And that information is then conveyed back to the funding institute. And then the application goes to the secondary level of review, which is the council. And the council then will review the applications and the outcome of the review, look at relevance, and generally they concur with the study section, or there may be some other actions taken. And then the recommendation goes to the institute director, who takes final action and hopefully allocates funds, and then the investigator is able to conduct the research with this support. So it's very complicated, but it's very good, because there's a checks and balances system whereby the initial review, the peer review, is able to concentrate entirely on scientific merit. Of course, there's, human subjects concerns, but it's a scientific merit. We're not concerned in that review with, whether the institute thinks this is an area that needs to build. That's the programmatic decision. That's their concern. And at CSR, the reviews are done without an eye to which institute the application comes from. So our committees will have in them applications from any number of NIH institutes. It might be that there's some from drug abuse, there may be some from child health, there may be some from aging, could be any assortment. We're kind of blind to that in assigning them to committees. They're assigned on the basis of the scientific content. Of course, they cluster certain institutes with certain research areas, but they're assigned with that, and the reviewers are not discussing why this was assigned to one or another institute. That's just not their call. So after that, when they go back to the council, other kind of discussion can go on. And we welcome program to attend the review meetings, and they attend as observers, and we do the same for council. But we don't participate, the peer review people don't participate in council discussion, and program doesn't participate in the review. So it's sort of something, a system that benefits from these different players taking a role at different times, and they think that it helps to identify the strongest science, and then the institutes can go from there in terms of relevance. Okay, this is the paper, and we still have plenty of it, but we're moving away from that. The first round was just occurred in December for electronic submission, and it was difficult, but we did manage on the small business applications to get almost the same number in as we typically got. So these piles will keep going down, and it's being sort of phased in by funding mechanisms to end with the R01s, because that's the biggest number. And you'll hear more about that. And as I said, after they sit in our, that was the referral office. So after they sit in there, they've been assigned to a scientific review group and an institute. And we have this big hefty book that's developed by the institutes that give us their mission and their areas of interest. And they overlap. And sometimes you get assigned to more than one institute, but it's the primary that takes the lead. But if it is assigned to more than one, it's easier for a later assigned institute to pick up the application should various things happen. Or even sometimes they might share. And, you know, you probably know the institutes that are of the greatest interest to your research areas. So in CSR, I think the peer review is quite similar to what it is in the institutes. And we have study sections, and they're managed by scientific review administrators, and you just got to meet some. And they're usually PhD. We also have a number of veterinarians, and we have some dentists. We cover every type of science that's seen at the NIH, so we have lots of variety in our staff. And we try when hiring to get people who are as close as possible to the area, because they have to look at those applications, see what they're about, figure out who should review them. And it helps if you know the science, obviously, and you know how to network in that area. They have to recruit people. And even if it's a standing study section where you have a regular roster, you still are filling in areas of expertise at each meeting because some areas aren't represented because they don't occur that often. Or, you know, there's just too much. We've got a lot of too much, particularly in recent years. Or somebody can't attend or what have you. So you're always recruiting. And that's actually a good thing because it helps you meet and see how newer people do, and then you can replenish the study section that way. So the standing study sections tend to have 12 to 24 members. Occasionally they have a few more. I don't think any have left fewer than 12. And typically there's 60 to 120 applications reviewed at each meeting. We try to stay away. We try, if we see a recurrence of the 120, we start thinking about splitting them, but it does happen. So the average, we aim for an average of 80. It's probably more like 90. And we don't like, we prefer that they're not too small, because the reviewers really need to see a quality range in order to get a sense of the scoring, and you're more likely to get a breadth of scores that way. And that's important for the process. So the peer reviewers are, we like them to be active and productive researchers pulled from a very large scientific community, but we generally have doctoral level reviewers. Sometimes on the small business applications we might not, because you're tending to look at a lot of technology and they may have different degrees. The best, this is peer review, and you're coming in with a research application, and we want people who know the system and have been through the system and know what to look for and what might suggest a successful outcome in terms of the research. So it's best to have people who are experienced. As I said before, you can look at any study section. This is from our website, and it's just the roster page. And you can click on two things here. Well, you can click on three things. You can send an email to the SRA if you like, if you're clicking on the right side. In the middle is the description of the study section from our guidelines for the IRGs. Those are integrated review groups, and we have 24 of them. And I'll show you later which ones are likely to be the most relevant to you. And the study section acronym. If you click on the study section acronym, you get the roster, not only the membership roster, which are the chartered members, but also the rosters for the past three meetings. And the rosters for the past three meetings will give you an idea who attends the study section in addition to the chartered members. And if you look at it and you don't recognize any names, it's probably not peer review for you. So, you know, occasionally people just look at the wrong roster because it has a similar name or whatever. But you should be recognizing at least people you read. You may not know them personally, but they should be people whose work you're aware of. And you'll get an idea of the breadth of the study section by looking at the roster. So if you're looking around and you, I mean, if you don't suggest the study section, the referral office will do this for you. If you do suggest the study section, the referral office will look at your request and may or may not grant it, but they'll grant it if it's at all possible. So if there's a conflict or if you're just wrong, and that occasionally happens, I used to have a study section called Human Development and Aging, and there was another one that was sort of, it was another kind of almost the same name, but it was actually Embryology and Reproductive Medicine, and occasionally it was HED instead of HUD, and occasionally people would request the wrong one, and they were just wrong, so that's okay. We don't let you go to the wrong place. So your requests are looked at, and we try to meet them if at all possible. So there you'll get to see who's on, and that would help you. There's one thing you do need to know. If you're working in the AIDS area, it's required by law, actually, that those applications come through the system more quickly. So they have to be reviewed in the AIDS committees. We are not actually allowed to take requests away, you know, we're not allowed to move them, even though sometimes there's requests to do so for various reasons. There's an IRG called AARR, and that may be relevant to your research. Okay, so here you see this is the language and communication study section, and it just shows you that there's the name, and you can view roster. That means the membership roster. You can again email the SRA, and you can look at the past three meeting rosters. Our meeting rosters come up 30 days before the meeting automatically. So if you're not seeing the one for the next round, it's too soon. Okay, this is the Center for Scientific Review Organization. There's four review divisions. The AIDS applications are in the Division of Biologic Basis of Disease, AIDS and Related Research. The majority of the behavioral social science study sections are in the aqua sort of color, and that's the Division of Clinical Population-Based Studies. And one is Health of the Population has the community interventions and prevention. They also have behavioral genetics and epidemiology and other epidemiology study sections. Risk prevention and health behavior, which Mike Nicholas is the chief of, has behavioral medicine. It also has a study section on social personality, and it has one on risk, psychosocial risk. So that's of great relevance to has a lot of applications from NIMH. Biobehavioral and behavioral processes has an adult psychopathology, child psychopathology, and developmental disorders. Also has one on stress, which Mary Beth Shampoo, who was just here, is the SRA. And there's one that does a lot of animal learning and other studies. So that has a lot of material that's relevant to NIMH as well, and as well as the cognition, perception, and language. Surgery really doesn't have any for you. And brain disorders and clinical neuroscience has more basic research, and there's a study section in there on psychopathology as well. It's just more basic science, and all of those, you know, will employ imaging, but that one employs more imaging, so more anatomically. So that's the division that has the majority of the research. If you're very basic science, molecular oriented, under molecular and cellular mechanisms, the MDCN IRG, which is at the bottom, also has study sections, and there's also quite a bit of NIMH research in the genes, genomes, and genetics IRG. So, as I said, we don't assign by funding institutes, so it's in a lot of different places, but those would be the core of where you would find the reviewers who would be relevant to your research. So, in terms of keys to success, I heard the question about the introduction and, you know, when you're trying to figure out how to structure your application, you need to think like a reviewer and learn as much about our system as you can. You know, think, I don't want to make it as bleak as the SRA said that they're reading at 2 in the morning, but they might be. So, and they read a lot, so you want your really main points to stand out. You want to anticipate and preempt criticisms and present alternatives to the approaches that you're presenting and justify why you made the choices that you did. They probably know there are other measures or other protocols or other whatevers, so not mentioning them isn't going to hide the fact that they exist. You want the application to be well organized. What do you want to do? How do you want to do it? And why do you want to do it? And what's the expected outcome? And why is this important? What will this contribute? We have the 5 review criteria. They were recently tweaked a bit, updated some, but they still have the same names. And you need to address those because the reviewers are going to have to write a section on each of those review criteria. If it is a continuation or a revised application, you also want to address what the changes were, which you'll do in the introduction, but you want to make sure that they come through in the text as well. And if it's a continuation, you certainly want to reflect progress. And you need to address any pertinent administrative issues having to do with human subjects, vertebrate animals, biohazards, data safety and monitoring, et cetera. Now, in terms of human subjects, they have to be addressed in all applications, even if it's so little as to say there are no human subjects. It can't be blank anymore. You have to have that section. Make sure you know that all these things will be discussed in the review, so you want to make sure that it's clear that you've addressed them. You don't want to write this for the specialist. SRAs are not actually in the business of giving you feedback on your reviews except for the written summary statement, but we still sometimes get calls, and people will call, you know, before we have time to say, you need to talk to program, and they might say, but everybody in my department thought this was the best application they ever read. But you really have to show it to somebody who's not so close to your work, you know, because the committee is going to be broad in the sense it's not going to be amazingly broad because it's going to be specialized in an area, but it's going to have people who do many different approaches to the area, and they all have to appreciate why it's a strong application and why it was going to make a contribution. And you must convince the entire review committee. Everybody votes a score, and everybody can participate in discussion even though they may not be assigned. Now, you'll hear more about this from program, but what you're going to choose for funding mechanism has to do with the point you're in your career and whether you have pilot data. And the best way to approach that, of course, is to talk to program at the Potential Funding Institute and see what they recommend. Every institute has a different list of mechanisms that they support or a different extent to which they support them, so don't make any assumptions. It is possible, it doesn't happen often because we work very hard to find homes for all the applications, but occasionally somebody's going to put something in that's in a rarely used mechanism, and if it doesn't fit that institute, it may have to be returned. So we don't like that to happen. And we try, but you know, you really should check ahead that what you want to do fits the area of science that you're proposing it in. And then just as a final item to mention, the Center for Scientific Review is starting a pilot to give, if you're a new investigator, and the definition of new investigator you've probably heard is your first R01. You've never had an R01 before. It doesn't mean you haven't had a grant before. It has nothing to do with age. It's when you got your degree. It's just a question of not having had an R01 before. If that's the case, we're going to be producing those summary statements faster and trying to have earlier meetings starting with the next review round, not the one we're currently in. And then the new investigators will have a different resubmission date. In other words, they can turn it around for the very next review. We don't want you to do this without talking to program, because if you need an extensive revision and you do a quick one, you're probably wasting your time. So, but if you can do, if it's what reviewers like to sometimes call smaller fixes, if you can do a quicker turnaround, you would end up saving time because there's concern about getting people not having to go through the 9-month cycle so often. That there is a NIH guide notice on that, and on the new investigator pilot, and I just wanted to mention that because it might be pertinent to some of you.